Are you thinking of moving into a bigger salon or clinic? Or maybe you're finally making the move from that tiny spare room in your home into a space that can accommodate future growth? Whatever the situation, there's some important stuff you need to know, like how to ensure your workspace is compliant and functional, while also being pretty and creating a pleasant vibe for both clients and staff. Robin Hawk from Inspired Spaces is here to give you all the information you need before you take that next step in your health and wellness business. Get your pen and paper ready and let's jump into the episode. Welcome to the Marketing and Me podcast. If you're eager to grow your health and wellness business via effective marketing methods while maintaining your own health and wellness, this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Leanne Shelton, a bubbly, driven, chocolate-obsessed, positive thinker and action taker who helps business owners just like you overcome their fear of failure to step up and show up in the scary online world. Because I know you have a message that needs to be heard, and I know you want to make a big impact on the world. By becoming more visible in the online space, you can attract and retain your ideal customers. And I can help you do this by putting together effective and engaging marketing strategies and copywriting at Right Time Marketing. So feel free to book in a 50-minute chat with me after listening to today's episode. The details are in the show notes. And today I'm joined by my guest, Robin Hawk. Welcome, Robin.
Hi, Leanne. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So I'll just read out your little bios. Everyone knows who you are. But I've known Robin for a number of years now. I think it was through IBN Inc. that initially connected. Does that sound about right? Somewhere else. I don't know. It's somewhere on the networking.
I think it was IBN Inc.
I know we crossed paths a few different ways. Yep. So known each other for a few years now and just recently touched base. Like, all right, yes, got to have you on the podcast. So she is the face behind Inspired Spaces. Their key business focus is on residential redesign and creating the physical branding of a company's persona. And their ability to manipulate space is their key strength, which translates into beautiful, fully functioning spaces. Woo! So pretty and functional. So Robin and her team create concepts, drawings, images, and even animated walkthrough videos so clients can see and visualize their new space. They believe in the importance our environment has on our ability to enjoy life, function, and even our emotional responses. And they take their clients through the entire process from initial ideas to fully developed plans that have DA approval. I know that can be a bit of a pain in the bum sometimes.
Definitely.
I just want to pick up the animated walkthrough videos. How do they work?
Okay, so we do, because the CAD program that we use, we can create 3D images. Yep. And this program also has the ability to walk you through it. So I can create a video, start at your front door, walk in, and you can see what it would look like. Depending on how much you want to spend, it could actually be rendered in all the finishes and colours. But that is quite an expensive exercise. So most people are happy with just the generic finishes, just to get an idea of, yes, when I walk in, this is what this kind of space is going to look like. Biggest problem is people fall in love with floor plans, but don't think about where does my lounge go? Where does my TV go, or if it's in an office space, where does the reception, where can clients who are waiting for someone sit? And then it adds all the COVID issues now. So that's another total impact on designing for office spaces and, you know, for retail rather. It's all those sort of issues and conditions that we need to take into account. And I don't see it changing too quickly. With COVID gone, I still think we'll have these more social distancing designs coming about.
Yeah, so does that put a bit of an extra challenge onto you, doesn't it?
Definitely, because now that you've gone away from having to have big desktop CPUs, you're all connected on a file server, et cetera. For instance, desks were becoming smaller so that you've got that real estate of that space, and that means you could fit more in. So some of the, say, workstations were only coming to about 1,500 wide. Now, that's not going to give you social distancing. So therefore, to get your social distancing, you're going to need at least a desk that's 1,800 wide. That means 1.8 metres wide. You add that up over four or five workstations, that's quite a bit of room that you will actually lose.
Yeah, very true. Have you had many people come back to you going, all right, help us change our space so it's COVID safe?
Not yet. The last one we did, we were probably very lucky that we actually were COVID friendly just by default, not by good luck, good design.
Nice to have, you know, your own space anyway when you're working rather than have someone right next to you looking over your shoulder, because that's a bit distracting.
Yeah, well, that's funny because this was the second project I did with this company. But they first started out, they had a small dingy space, and then they grew, and then they said they wanted a bespoke place space. And we thought we had allowed for growth, but they grew so quickly that within 18 months they'd outgrown it. They stayed another 18 months longer than what they should have, and then went, no, if they're having problems, they were having conflict with people were fighting, the teams was people were crying, people were leaving, all because of the fact that they were too cramped in the space. So one of the key things that when they moved to this new office space and we tripled the size of where they were, was that they wanted the bigger benches, the bigger desk space, because they actually learnt that from experience that the 1500 really wasn't enough. And because the nature of the business, it was a strata management business, even though they're trying to go paperless, there is still a lot of legal documents that they actually have to have as hard copies, and that was spread out on the desks, and they're finding that wasn't enough room. So for them, they've been fortunate in that they were COVID-friendly anyway, and because of the way we designed, we had separate pods, so we had not everyone wasn't on each other. They were different pods of groups, and the largest amount of people we had in one spot was six people. So, and we were allowing for expansion. So we had a lot of empty workstations. So they would have been able to disperse the people into the empty workspace and stations anyway, for them. So they were lucky. But it was interesting with that particular design, we'd actually had integrated all IT software. So that people could actually dial in and do a Zoom meeting and do meetings. So this was to future-proof it, and we only finished it just before COVID hit.
Oh, well done!
And the whole office is just connected. There's three meeting rooms and a big boardroom. That's all connected. All the back ends are connected, and we had a special camera that was built into the walls to be able to take that. So now they were able to do all their meetings offline. And of course they're doing strata meetings. It meant that the owners of the business of the units or whatever could dial in and not have to worry about being COVID friendly.
There you go. So they're all sorted and they're all, good. All future proof, as you said. Because when I used to work in my telesales role and I think I kind of probably wasn't enough space, but I was just thinking, if everyone's doing their individual Zoom meetings, it'd be kind of like a call center where everyone's like trying to talk over each other. When you go, voices. But I sort of touch on before I just go into your business journey, which I'd love to talk about. How do you know that you've outgrown your space? Just when you were talking about they were 18 months too long, how do you know you are there too long when you are getting to each other's way, or
you can start looking at staff turnover. You can start looking at staff conflict and morale. You can start looking at productivity. Is it taking longer to do something? Staff leaving work on the dot, or are they coming in right on the start off time and they're not tending? Those sort of things are an indication. When you are crowding, pushing people in and trying to fit people in and you're literally falling over each other to get around, that's not conducive. And this was what was happening. And really, they really end up not being compliant. And then heaven forbid something was to go wrong or was an accident and you had to do an emergency evacuation. And if you've got too many people in that space, you can't get out. So that could have been an issue as well. So, yeah, they were finding that, you know, people were doing, being a strata management, people come in and do searches before they purchase a home or they rent it, I mean, a unit or something like that. So they see what all the history of that particular unit block is. So they actually come into the office and look through all their files to do so. So we had a particular room called a search room where clients would come in and sit and look through that information. And they were finding that they couldn't fit everybody in.
Yeah, Brian, I find cabinets as well, if you've got physical paperwork, pulling that out and you're banging into people who are pulling your cabinets on the other side.
Yeah, and you basically had to move furniture for people to move around. So that's not good. Yeah.
That's a good indication there. Awesome. That's fair enough. Now, I love to go into your business journey. So tell us, Robin, where did you come from and how did you end up where you are today?
Okay, as you know, I was a high school teacher prior to this. But I did teach design, so it wasn't exactly left field that I went into design. I was a kid at school who was innately shy, and I am innately shy, and people get a shock, but it's something I've learnt to overcome, and I work at it. So in a huge room, a lot of people, you'll still find me tending to be by myself because it's that innate thing that you will learn to overcome. You have to overcome to fit in. So I always wanted to do design, probably fashion design to begin with, but didn't have, probably I was so shy, I didn't have the nerve to go after it. Won 2 scholarships to teaching and go, okay, I'll do that. So I just did it and then realised I didn't like it, hated it. Eldest daughter was born, but she has a severe disability, so I had actually resigned. I was never going back to teaching, but with her disability, I went back to teaching one day a week just to have a break to next minute I'm running a department and I'm stuck there. And then because of her disability, and she's 33 now, you didn't have any support and there was like, what do I do with her in the school holidays, etc. So I stayed. And then in 2002, I literally walked into school one day and said, I can't do this anymore. And went home and didn't go back.
Oh, well done. Made the decision. It's done.
Yeah. I just could not physically make myself want to go back into it. Took 6 months leave and did a lot of soul searching and realised every single thing I wanted to do was related to design. So I went to career advisors, talked to psychologists, everything, and everything had a design bent that I loved to do. So then it was like, okay, at 40 odd years of age, going into fashion design is probably not a sensible decision in terms of that. Whereas I've always loved interiors and architecture and everything like that. And age was actually an advantage. This is where age becomes an advantage. So you can imagine if you're a person, you know, it's your second home, so you've got a little bit more money to spend, you've got teenage kids or whatever, or you've got an office space and you've got people that, you want to improve the productivity of business, et cetera. If you have someone straight out of uni turning up fresh-faced and still looks about 15, even if they are 22 or 23, they're not going to get that respect and that acknowledgement in a lot of cases. And I know for some of the younger students that was an issue. Even getting samples when we were studying was an issue because of their age. So this way it worked to my advantage. So went back to 3 years full-time study, got fully qualified, even though I could have just had an ABN because of all my design background, but I didn't want to. I wanted to actually learn all my CAD, et cetera. So did that. Then we did 15 months at Clariton Homes. When I finished, when I graduated, and then they made us all redundant. And so I went, hoo-hoo, time to set up the business.
Yep, design, time's
yep,
right.
That's it. Yep, that's telling me, the universe is telling me that I don't need to work for anyone. And look, that was absolutely invaluable experience because you get taught when you're studying you get taught things, but not necessarily the practicality of things. You know, you don't get taught things about, or where do you locate the hot water system, or where does the air conditioning ducting go, and what impact is that going to have on the room layout?
Yes, all the practical stuff.
Yeah,
what about the pretty stuff? But you know, the practical.
Yeah,
stuff,
yeah. So I found when we were studying, it tended to be, if it looked good, that was it, rather than that. So when you go into even a where it be a house or an office, it's things like, have air conditioning. I mean, have we got enough air conditioning? I mean, how many offices have you been in where one side of the office is in overcoats in a 35-degree day?
Yes.
And the other side are, you know, got fans going, ice packs on them because they're so hot, and it's the same office space because the air conditioning hasn't been commissioned correctly.
That happened to me where I used to work, and it was one room and they had the aircon in there, so they were always really comfortable. We're like, the sweating or freezing, we can never get it right.
Yeah, they could never
get it right. One wall apart from each other.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's also those requirements too for BCA and Australian standards about certain number of people in a certain room and the airflow, etc. So all those sort of mechanical stuff that you just don't get taught, that you learn on the way, that are really... So those, having that 18 or 15 months experience was brilliant with that. And I jokingly say, you know, I learned everything, including the kitchen sink.
That's brilliant. And so actually we're talking about a bit of the compliance thing there. So if someone is thinking, you know, one of our listeners is thinking of moving into a new clinic or a salon, like what are some of the compliances they must consider?
Okay. So I did, as I said to you, I wrote a list so I wouldn't forget them all.
No worries.
First of all, you're going to have a complying development certificate. So that's equivalent to a DA, because usually if you're going into an office, it's someone else owns the building, so all the DA has been done. So you need a complying development certificate, of which you will then get the owner's permission to do so. They'll have to sign some paperwork for you. You then have to look at the strata body requirements. So I did, several years ago, Air Kalin's head office for, you know, the Air Kalin Airlines for New Caledonia. I did their head office. And where they are, you're not allowed to have any signage in the hallway.
Oh, that's interesting.
So you come out of the lift, you're not. So part of my strategy there was that we had a full height glass door, and we had the signage so that anyone walked out of the lift, when they turned, they looked through the door, and then we could see the signage.
Inside, yeah.
Inside that. So we had to do – so there's things like you've got to look at the strata levy, things like you actually have – people don't know – a long service levy. So that's cost of the build. That's 0.35% of the total cost of your build is a long service levy, non-negotiable. Can't get out of it. You then have to do a title search of the space, so that's another $50 or $60. A certificate 10.7, so anything from $53 to $110. You then have to have all your air conditioning and fire safety commissioned. So that, and there's things like you can't have, you've got to have nothing, no more than 20 metres for egress for safety things. So it's not as the crow flies, as it's however you lay out your furniture. You can have no point any more than 20 metres. So you've got to look at those considerations. You need certification by the builder, the plumber, emergency lighting, etc., all been done. So you even got to get the emergency lighting and emergency signs commissioned off. You need to have usually a waste management plan. So when you're doing the build, how it be done, etc. So those sort of things, you're up for a minimum between $8,000 to $11,000 before you even start building. And none of that's negotiable. Like, you just can't say that. So as a classic example, I'll use the Air Kalin's office. Because they were based in New Caledonia, the management came over and said, oh, I just don't want to pay for those fees. But they, you know,
me too.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you can't, because that was the rules in Australia. And you've got to do that. So, and there's a whole number of things, like simple things like we were part of the mascot as a job we're doing at Mascot 18 months ago. and partway through the Australian standards have modified, and you actually had to allow behind your reception desk, you have to have 1500 millimetres or 1.5 metres of space behind it, and that is to be disabled friendly. So that means if anyone is in a wheelchair, it means that they could still work there and do that. Now, originally, you only needed around, oh, well, I always allowed 1,200, so it allows enough room for your movement of chairs back, or sort of, yeah, no less than a metre anyway to do that. Now, that made a huge impact on our design because we had limited the reception area to maximise the back end area. And so all of a sudden, partway through the design, we're having to modify it slightly. So yes. There's those things like, and it used to be that your door width was only 820.
I was about to say doors. Yeah, you'd have to consider that as well.
And now they come up 850 and they've got to be 100 mil from the wall on the side of the hinge side, all those sort of things. You've got to have a 1,500 metre square turning space if in front of a fire exit so that if people congest, they can get out. So they're all the considerations that you have to take into account, and people go, oh, well, we won't bother getting it certified. But if you don't get it certified and something happens, you could end up in jail.
Yes.
So like someone wants to die or someone's to get badly injured because of something that it's not worth it. So to save you $8,000 in the beginning, it's not a wise move. It's a bit like your insurance. It's like buying a house, not buying insurance. You're leaving yourself wide open for that unforeseen. And this is the same as this. So what happens is because it's been certified to those today's standards, if something happens, you're covered, heaven forbid, that covered. And it's applicable. So, for instance, it used to, your egress used to be only 1,200. Now it's 1,500. Now, if it is an existing office that had actually been created that way according to the standards when they did it, that's okay. But if it hadn't been through the standards and it was 1,200 and something happened and it was 1,500, you could be liable. So there's a whole variety of different things that people need to be take into consideration. And this is why basically, if anyone won't do a CDC, I tend to walk away from the job.
Yeah. So is this based on if, I guess there's just two examples, if you walk in, there's a complete empty space that you then have to build, put walls in, everything like that, that would have some sort of, it's probably easy to work with that because then you go, all right, I know the spacing and everything like that, I'll make that work. And I guess then there's other things to think about if you are moving into an existing space before you agree to buy it or rent it to double check that it meets all the compliances before you agree to it.
We did a small office, lawyer's office. She was did visa specialty. And the office she got, it was not compliant. The head height in one area wasn't compliant. So we actually had to apply for an alternate solution for that, and we managed to get through. But that was something that I pointed out to her prior to her. She actually asked me to come around and have a look at it before she rented it and said, do you think you can do what you can do with it? And I said, yes, however, this is not compliant. So then it was discussions and some research on her part to see if we could get it work around it. And that was, it was found out why. It was probably why it was so cost effective for Walker Street, North Sydney. It was like that was why it was cheap, obviously, because of those issues. So, yes. But, as long as you know what you're dealing with, well, then if you know all the variables, it makes it easier.
Yes. And is there like a government website or page that people can check out with that full list somewhere easy?
No, it sort of changes, and you've got to also look at each council. Each council has slight variations on what is required. So it's a matter of doing your due diligence with the local council that you're working with, looking at your strata body things, etc. And that's why you really do need someone who really knows their conveyancing or a solicitor that really understands the property constitutions, property laws. Because they're all different.
Yes. So they do that first and then approach you, or do you better help with something like that?
Look, I can only help with that in terms of common sense and experience.
Yes.
But you couldn't take it as total gospel.
Legal advice, yeah.
As legal advice. But yeah. And a lot of people actually get me in beforehand before they do the actual purchase or rental. So the one at Mascot, as I was talking about earlier, they showed me about 4 different locations, and I kept saying, no, we can't do what you want in that space. Whereas yes. In this particular space, we can do it.
Yeah, so obviously you've got to have a vision for what you do want, and then find a space that meets that rather than the other way around.
Yeah, so you've got to be very clear. What you need to do is be very clear about what it is that you need. Do you need a reception desk? And a lot of people these days don't. So then if you don't need a reception desk, what do we have? We still tend to need a waiting area, especially as, again, coming back to COVID. You know, you can only have X amount of people in a certain space, you know, and who knows, it varies from 4 meters squared to 2 meters squared, changes every day. So you just got to take that into account. But so you still need a reception area, but you still need to be able to notify people that you're there. And so those sort of considerations. Do we look at, okay, we have an iPad sign-in system, or we ring a bell and someone comes and meets us? You know, it depends on what you're trying to do in terms of that. But know definitely what is required. Do I need workstations? Do I need offices? Do I need storage? Do I need room for a file server? You need to understand what it is and how many people. So I need a boardroom. How many people do I need the boardroom for? Now, this particular one, again, at Mascot, we had a table that sat 24, but we could actually fit more in if we needed to. But they were very clear. And the advantage with this particular company is that I'd worked with them. I did their previous office, so I really understood their business. So when we're designing with people, we actually look at their mission statement, their values, their company structure, how many departments, who's answerable to who. So everyone is then allocated a space. So we actually have, for instance, the sales team sitting near the sales manager. But we'll put the sales team as far away from the accounting team as possible. And then they would be the chief financial officer is then near them. Or do we need a couple of the managers? Do they need to be close together because they're going to have a lot of interaction? So we don't necessarily want to be working there. Now, as I said, the Mascot one I use again, but we had nearly 400 metres square to work with. Mm-hmm. And we were able to put a breakout area in the middle. We put a breakout area in the middle of the space. And some people went, oh, why did you do that? I said, the purpose being is that we were able to break it up into 3 distinct areas because of the breakout area.
Yes.
So they were all still connected because they still came in to the breakout area, but they also had their own areas of privacy and the noise transfer was cut down significantly.
Yes. And so I'm just thinking, like, in terms of our salons and clinics, we have a different kind of format.
Totally, yep.
So, like, clinics, for example, if you've got, like, say, psychology or something, you're going to have soundproof rooms and things like that, because obviously when you speak with a client, you want it to be private. So that will be completely different to a salon where obviously it's mostly open space. You might want a little kitchenette staff room area where you kind of mingle and everything like that, but I guess you just kind of have a vision of how your team's going to function and what your requirements are. Do you need that privacy and quiet? Do you need, as you sell, for example, your hair salon, and then you've got the beauty part at the back where you're going to want them to have relaxing music and not hear the hair dryer going, you know, maybe things like that. So, just have a think about what you need and then.
You've got to work out. Yeah.
Yeah, so and that brings me to my next question. We've kind of talked about what this is, but what your definition of a functional space is and what does it feature? Because it's not just about making it pretty, which we'll talk about the pretty part shortly, but what's your definition of functional and what does it feature? I guess it does kind of vary, as we're just saying.
Okay, let's start thinking about, well, let's sort of say your salons, because you say your specialties in that a particular area and wellness thing. So for me, a functional area is somewhere that one staff can work productively without risk of injury. And it's a very ergonomic environment, and it's a space that they want to come to. So it's no use having a space whereby staff don't want to turn up to, and all they're trying to do is get out as quick as possible. So could do that. I, from experience, and I understand real estate is really expensive, but from experience in some of these salons, or where it be makeup or wellness, or you go for massage, I actually find the rooms far too small. And I know it's an economic return on investment, but I almost feel like they squish too many people into that one, too many rooms into that one space. And what to me then is then compromising what you actually are being received with that. So, but that's just my personal opinion. And there's obviously other factors to come into that. But just because it's functional doesn't mean it can't be pretty, right? So... I often use the example, for instance, this is said, my eldest daughter's disabled, and she was in, she used to have to go in standing frames and walk in sitting frames and all that. Now, back 33 years ago, all we would get is these particular apparatus in plywood, nothing else. You know, so for a kid who's got some cerebral palsy and you're trying to teach her to stand, to put her in basically it's a contraption to help us, to strap her in to help her with the standing. And it's just at a chipboard. It's just not, you know, it's, why would they want to do it? Because it's not fun. It's not interesting. So I used to get them and paint them and decorate them up so that she could want to do it. And that's
functional
the same
pretty, right? Functional yeah. pretty.
Yeah. So you've got to make it appealing. And so, and that's the same with a function. It has to be functional. You must be able to work there. You must be, no one's be able to get injured. It's got to be ergonomic. However, you want people to come through the door. You know, we say we don't judge a book by its cover, but in reality, sorry, what opens, what chooses, why do you pick up that book to open it and it's the cover? That's sure. the first thing. You pick it up and go, oh, the cover, oh, that looks good. You will then read everything else about it, but you picked it off the shelf to begin with, to explore, to look at the synopsis, to look at the summary of it and what it's about, who the author is, oh, yeah, I like that author, et cetera. And it's all to do with how that cover's presented. And that's the same with your salon, your any shop front, anything like that. Do I want to walk through that? Now, if I'm going in for a massage or something like that or a facial, I don't want to feel like, am I going to come out with the bubonic plague because it doesn't look, I mean, I've been extreme examples here, yeah, but that's yeah. what I'm, that's what it is. And you want it to be recognisable. I mean, I use the classic example of Tiffany. Tiffany, you know, it's, every Tiffany store is not exactly the same, but it's enough the same that you know you're in a Tiffany store. Okay. And the expectation is that when you walk into a Tiffany store, you're not going to find anything cheaper than $200, basically.
That's why I don't really go to Tiffany stores.
That's what they, and when they can sell, what is it? They can do a paperclip for $1,500
yes.
or something like.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Now they've got marketing and branding, right? But you'll notice their branding isn't just on their website or logo, it's the actual physical environment that they're working in. Their shops are all part of their branding and it's all part of the experience. Now, if you're in wellness and beauty, if I'm actually splurging and I go, you know what, I've got a little bit in the budget to go and have that facial or have that manicure, I want to feel like I'm being, you know, spoilt. And that's it needs to look like that. And you can do it without spending a fortune. But
yeah.
you want to feel in, come in and just feel like, yeah, I've got this right. I'm coming to relax. So obviously you wouldn't be having colours like orange and reds there. And that's why you've got your blues, your greens, your softer tints that are happening. But you can also be a little bit more creative. You can have the little bit, you know, play with some wallpapers or different finishes, et cetera. So they're the sort of things that are all part and parcel of it and helps to make the functionality. But other things in terms of functionality, for instance, I'll just give an example. If you want someone to be creative, you have higher ceilings. If you want them to concentrate, you have lower ceilings. So,
interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think you've heard me give the talk about Salk, who he actually came up with the vaccine for polio. And he actually says it's Jonas Salk says it's because of the space he was in. So he's in Pittsburgh, I think it is. I'll stand corrected on that. In some basement lab, and could not come up with a solution. Took a sabbatical over to Italy. I think it was. My pronunciation will be wrong, but it's Basilica Sissi or something. I can't pronounce it properly. But he went over there, and just walking through there, the whole idea came to him. So then he purpose-built buildings for creating, coming up with creative solutions for things. So anything where you want to be creative, you've got to let – so basically it was about letting your thoughts flow.
Yes, imagine like it's kind of lots of energy around. Otherwise you're trapped in a box.
Yeah, whereas if you're really concentrating on something really detailed, then you actually – close the space in a bit more. And if you anything to do with Rudolf Steiner, he very much with that philosophy, and I know a bit about it because where my daughter goes to day placement, and it's based on Rudolf Steiner's philosophies. So if they're and they use color therapy a lot, color therapy and movement. So if the client is very out there, can't concentrate, etc., then they will give them activities that bring them in. So like pottery, where they've got to, in the pottery wheel, where they've got to bring themselves in and bring themselves in. Now, for the quieter ones that isn't, they'll give them activities where they're more extroverted and they've got to bring themselves out and let themselves go, where it'd be painting or something like that.
Or musical instruments that would be banging something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, all that. And then that's based with the colours. So I did the colours – I did all the finishes for their Dalcara precinct, and we did it about what the function was the room. We based the colour selection based on the function of the room. So where it needed to be calmer and bring it in, there was the blues and greens. For the where they wanted them to be more extroverted, we went into our reds and oranges, etc. And it's all about colour therapy. And you can use that same thing there. Also things like fuse to natural settings increases your concentration. So whether it be even if it's just a picture, an image, you can still have the same effect. So, for instance, if you're in a block, your salon's in a space and you come like maybe in a Castle Towers or Westfield or something like that where you've got no windows, whatever, there's nothing stopping you to use a big mural of a natural setting. And that can give a sense of calmness because with a cityscape or something like that, that is busy. So your brain is concentrated and made busy trying to work it out. Whereas look at the background of mine at the moment, that's so calm and so chilled that, you know, that's what you do. So you can do things like that to do it. And they've also shown that it decreases blood pressure, you know, people's anxiety and everything along those lines. So that is definitely something that they can do. Probably we've already touched on noise transfer and acoustics. That is a big one that people, and especially if you're doing psychologists or psychiatrists, those sort of people, definitely noise transfer. And ideally it'd be nice, but I know it's very usually not possible, but it'd be almost lovely that people, because mental illness, for instance, is still, it's more open, and people are more willing to talk about it, but still a little bit more taboo. But it'd almost be nice if you have two separate entries, so the people coming in and going out. That's not likely to happen, you know. So other things in terms of making a functional space is having adequate storage. Big one people often forget about is the storage aspect of it.
Yes, true. It's like I would just have this one little spot for the filing cabinet, or it's probably the last thing I think about. Oh, we'll just put the filing cabinet there.
And sometimes it's actually worth getting it custom made to do your solutions. I'm just going back to this mascot one, but being strata managers, I actually design drawers to take all the fobs and keys for every single building they looked after. And it had a set space And that, so then they opened up all the drawers at any one point, because the old key holder before where you had keys doesn't work anymore because you've got remotes, you've got fobs to get in. So that works like that. I would also look at making sure your IT is up to date in terms of functionality. You cannot function without that. And try and have up-to-date equipment as possible. You know, try to be as up-to-date as possible. Again, understand that, you know, setting up a new office, it is an investment. It's an investment that you're putting out. But I like to think of it as an economic strategy, not an unnecessary expense. And if you think of it as an economic strategy, you will get return on investment. If you think of it as an unnecessary expense, you then won't spend the money that's needed and you won't get the result you want.
Yeah, I love that. Can you actually expand a little bit more on that? Because I know we're going to talk about a little bit with increasing profits and things, but yeah, what do you mean by that exactly? Like, is it because, as we were saying before, if people go in, get a really positive experience from in the investing in the decor, the painting, then they're more likely to come back, refer people, so therefore it's worth, you'll get the return investment on that. Is that kind of thing you mean? Or
yeah,
is it something
and
else?
Also to reducing staff from staff turnover.
Yes, every staff time want staff, to be in the space. Yeah.
Yeah. Every time your staff leaves, that costs you money.
Yeah.
A classic. I've had a lady that was working with me for over 4 years. She left, and look, she only came in to do a maternity leave and was only going to stay 12 months. So, and I always knew that she would be going to get her own business set up. But after 4 years, I would just say, I need this done. And it was done. Now the new person that's come in, she's brilliant, but you still got to. It's still not as productive as when it works. So do that. Now I've actually got some figures here. Let me just quickly find it. But I had it highlighted, and of course I can't find it now. But they've actually done. The problem is because it's more qualitative. Your results are more qualitative rather than quantitative, with that you get a chief financial officer and they go, oh, no, that's what they're looking at. And it says here, I've got a quote from a guy called Schumann and Scott of Weber and Thompson that says, there is a direct relationship between the success of a business and the design of the work environment. A well-designed space can retain quality staff, improve staff morale, and bottom-line financial gain. And that is another study shows that an employee's workplace is responsible for as much as 24% of his or her job satisfaction. And a well-thought-out office design can decrease absenteeism by 15% and increase productivity by 5 to 20%.
There you go.
Right. So I've been managed to find a few studies that gives me a quantitative data that I can present to someone like the chief financial officer.
Awesome.
Because they're usually my or the accountant, because they're the ones that usually go, oh, do we really need this? And we do. To make it such, that's why it's to do. And also, it's another thing, if you've got a bad staff culture, one of the ways of improving it is actually to improve the actual environment that which you're in. Yeah, think about going to your own house. Is there a room that everyone gravitates to, right?
Yeah.
There is. Is there a room that just becomes the junk collection room? There is.
Yeah.
Right? And it's the same with... And you don't really want to go into that room, or you go into that room and every time you go into that room, you go, oh, I've got to do something about it.
That was my office for a little while there. I've cleaned it up now, but yes, that was.
But you go, oh, no, you know, you don't, and you get out of there as quick as possible. You don't linger. But there's other rooms you linger. That is what you want. You want your clients to linger, unless you're McDonald's. and, you know, you want the staff to linger. You know, things like this mascot, going back to that mascot job, you know, they don't have to encourage staff. You know, if there's a deadline and it comes 5 o'clock, they're now happy to stay and work longer. Whereas when the old office, where they're on top of each other, it was like, oh, it's 5 o'clock, your problem, bye. But also what this company does well, and I advise everyone else, they've invested in a good coffee machine for the staff.
Brilliant. Right?
And they bring in fresh fruit.
Yes, every single little touches. Day. Yes.
So that in itself is all part and parcel of it. You know, and things like the biggest jump for me when I went into the corporate world from having teaching to going with Claritin, I turned up my first day of work with Claritin with my coffee cup, my tea bags, my milk, and they all looked at me and went, "What are you doing?" And I'm going, "Oh, at school you had to supply all that stuff." But I just felt so good. I went, wow, I can actually just go to work and not worry if I got any milk, fresh milk, or if I got this or that, because it's supplied. So there's little things like that that are also part of it in terms of that. And other things is what I like is a distinct threshold between front and back. It's nothing worse than walking into an office and going, "Oh, sorry, am I actually in the right place?" Or feel like you're invading someone's privacy. And so you need a defined entry to make it functional. I'm assuming probably with most, probably not necessarily psychologists, but anything that's to do with wellness and beauty and that, they usually need a distinct front end because they usually have a reception desk or at least a part of that. And
a little
also
waiting area. Actually, the waiting area, that's a little good point. Make that really inviting if people are likely to wait their 5-10 minutes. Look, I mean, the standard magazine thing, but maybe you have motivational quotes on the wall or something else, a nice, scented candles there. Or I love the ones that give you tea or something while you wait.
I've noticed a few, like at my eye specialist, they used to always have tea, but now with COVID they're not. That little thing like, "Oh, my God, I'm here for an hour." Yeah, because there's nothing for them to be an hour late if there's some sort of emergency. But when you could go and get yourself a cup of tea and sit back, "Oh, yeah, okay, it's all right." And it's the same with your waiting rooms. So you need to go, you don't want them sitting in there going, "I feel uncomfortable. I feel like I'm on top of everybody. I feel like I shouldn't be here." Now, the whole purpose of going there is to be pampered or looked after, and that's not part of it. So some of those, I think it's, company, is it the Urban Spa Company? They do their waiting areas very well, and there's a real distinct front and back, and even the doors into the back don't look like doors. It all looks like just part of the walls. They do it very well in that. And you sort of walk in there going, "Yeah, I'm going to be paying a little bit more of a premium, but I'm happy to do so." And that's my perception of what they do.
Yes. And I'm thinking about where I get my nails done, for example. It's an independent one, and they've just, the walls, it's beautiful how they've painted them. It's like that, what do you call that pattern where it's like the brush is just kind of this, I don't know, it's not straight plain painting. It's kind of
they've cross-hatched it.
And they've got, you know, beautiful big mirror, round mirrors, and it's just a nice little couches, and just, I walk in, and before I even had my nails done for the first time, I'm like, "This is a really cool space. Like, I really like this." And it was very open. And so it was just a really good vibe when you, and then, you know, I've gone back and I've had my daughter's birthday party there last year, and the kids loved it. And they've always got fun music. I think music's a good thing as well. If you can. And they've always got upbeat music, just on Spotify, and I guess in a good mood while you're there for an hour or something.
And you don't begrudge the time that you're there.
Yeah.
And then when you pay the bill, you sort of okay, that's what I expected.
Yeah, it's a really great experience.
And that's all part of it. And whether it's the client or the customer or the staff, it still needs to be a great experience for the staff to want to be working there. Because, I mean, you look at, say, hairdressers, how many times have you finally found a hairdresser that can cut your hair right and you really like it, and then you go to book them in again and, "Oh, they've moved."
Yeah. And you're like, "Where did they go? I want to follow them." But they won't give you that information.
No, they're not going to tell you that information.
Yeah.
But I don't know why hairdressers have a lot of, I find hairdressers tend to have a lot of staff turnover. So the question is, is that just the industry that you go from place to place for experience, or do you look at why that is the case? What is it about it that you're doing? I find also a lot of hairdressers too noisy. Mm. I think they have, with all their mirrors and surfaces that are going to be wiped down, I actually feel like they should be putting more acoustic detail in, because you've got, you know, if you've got a big salon and you've got 10 lots of hairdryers going, it's so damn noisy. And you know, if you're sitting there for 3 hours to get your hair done, and that's how long it takes my hair to be done.
Yeah, yeah. The noise pollution can just make it not so relaxing.
Yeah. So yes. I think acoustics are really, really important.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's forgotten, as well as lighting.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be overall lighting. It can be task lighting. You know, another little thing is too, you know, what's another thing you could be adding for your clients while they're waiting? Yeah, your phone's gone dead. Have some USB chargers so that clients can use in the waiting room.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, because how often are we flat? Yeah. And you're like, oh, damn it, I'm running out of
halfway that. Through the day and you're like, oh, it's just, I'm here for 15 minutes. If only you could just charge it, give it a little, yeah.
Yeah, you can just start. Yeah. till I get back to the office or whatever.
Yeah,
So we need those sort of considerations are all part of the customer experience that people don't understand how that. So that becomes part of your economic strategy, and it's also part of your marketing, is that I am recognised by my shop front. I am recognised by not just my website or my business card. And as I said, go back to the classic example of Tiffany. They have it down perfectly.
They've stolen my colour.
Yes, I can see it in the background. You've got the Tiffany blue in the background.
I've always got my turquoise, yeah, the light turquoise happening. I've got my water bottles. There you go. Look at this.
Yeah.
Stole it. Anyway, no, that's really great advice. Thanks, Robin. I've taken a bit of notes. But, yes, everyone go back and listen to this episode again if you've been driving and you're like, oh, that's really great information. And I'll put in the show notes as well. Yeah, Robin, if you can share some of those resources you're saying, like that'd be brilliant as well. And so I always ask my guests this, Robin, how do you manage your health and wellness? We've talked a bit about your hair, and what else do you do to keep yourself well?
My absolute wind down is a long hot bath, like a long luxurious bubble bath, of which some people go, oh, I've got a friend who goes, oh, no, whoa, couldn't do it. And I'm like, what do you mean? That is my time. That was when the kids were younger. It was like, mum's in the bath, your father's got to deal with you. That's that. Reading a good book. I read every single night.
What kind of genre? Any type of genre?
Everything. In fact, quite like it, I get my husband, every birthday, Christmas, he always buys me these books, but he tends to, I don't care what he buys, because you get into a habit of buying the same genre again. So then he'll buy something totally different, and it just broadens your horizon. But anything from historical novels to spies to mysteries, whodunit type ones, a real escapism.
Yeah.
But I draw the line at Mills and Boone. Nah.
Yes. No, nah. I tried reading one of those in my teenage years, like Snuck One of Mum's.
Yeah.
No. I've got a street library now, so you'll have to come check out street
okay,
library and grab
have
some
a look.
Books.
Yeah. So any of those sort of things, I do love the beach. Obviously, haven't got there that much this year. But
behind
yeah,
you
that
is.
Was, eh? Sorry, it is
anyone listening, yeah, the Zoom backdrop is a nice beach.
Yeah, with the waves, that would be lovely. Nice. My ideal rest is, you know, a day at the beach with some shade, a seat, some water and
that
a good book.
Yeah.
Yep, and you can just leave me there all day.
Love it. And then you come back and have a bath and your day is complete.
Yes, day's complete. That is my wellness. That's how I love to wind down.
Love it. Oh, that's so good. I'm just mentioning it now. How can people connect with you?
Okay, there's a couple of ways. Obviously, you've got my website, which is inspiredspaces.com.au. We've got my Instagram, which is Inspired Spaces AUS. So some people leave the AUS off because unfortunately by the time I got that handle, someone else had taken it overseas. You can do me link on my LinkedIn, which is just Robin Hawke. Facebook, which is Inspired Spaces. Or obviously just ring me on 0401068670, or you can email, it's Robin with a Y at inspiredspaces.com.au. And just keep an eye out. Hope in the next couple of months we're trying to be going to be launching a Facebook group all about renovations and design, and specifically design for that, with the purpose of building an online course with that as well. So I'm putting it out to the universe, so I've got to be accountable.
Yes, I know you've said it now. It has to happen. Yes. Well, thank you so much for today, Robin. I thought, yeah, brilliant advice. I'm sure there's some juicy gold nuggets of advice there that people are going to take away and go, yes, all right, didn't think about that or that, but now I'm going to make it happen. So thank you so much for everything. And thank you to you, dear listener, for tuning in. You can find show notes for the episode at marketingandme.com.au. If you enjoyed listening, please subscribe and leave me a rating and review via your podcast app or at ratethispodcast.com/marketingandme. If you're interested in reaching me, feel free to connect on LinkedIn to search for Leanne Shelton. And you might also be interested in my marketing membership, the Digital VIPs, which features monthly masterclasses, group coaching, and other little bonuses. Just check out the membership section at righttimemarketing.com.au. And my website also has a portfolio and more information about all the awesome stuff I can do for you and your growing health and wellness business. But until next time, I wish you good health and good wealth.